So this is a great segue from what we did on Thursday, insofar as Hashkacha is concerned. So we're going to take out the area of Nisim. Okay. So let's get our basic assumptions in place. So obviously, if we're going to talk about Nisim, there's two things we have to talk about. We have two caveats you have to have in place. One is there is a God, right? And number two, there's a natural world. Because if there is no natural world, then what do you think I mean by natural world?
The normative way that things...
Correct. It has to be a normative way that things work.
Why does it even have to...
So when it comes to... Now the question, how do we define a miracle? That's obviously the big question, okay? All right, so in the Oxford English Dictionary, not that that's a legitimate authority, but they say, an event not explicable by natural or scientific laws. Meaning, if I saw something take place, I could not offer a scientific explanation for why said event took place, okay? Which we can get into with B and C, which I think are actually emerging from that. Does that mean there's a change in natural law versus an aberration in natural law?
Aberration.
I'll tell you what the difference is. It'd be like this. Change in natural law is, let's take the Ibn Ezra and Rashi shot on Barad. Okay? So when Barad came down, so you had fire and you had ice. And they use this famous language called Nes Besoch Nes. Okay, there's a miracle within a miracle, which of course raises the question, well, if it's already a miracle, what do you need a miracle within a miracle for if it's already a miracle? How can you have more of a miracle? How can you subject miracle to quantity?
Because you mean how is it a double miracle?
Because if fire and ice, if fire and ice come together, what happens to them?
One
cancels the other out. So the Nes Besoch Nes here is an idea that God suspended a certain property, using Aristotelian terms, a certain property of each one, meaning the property of fire and ice coming together, one negating the other, was suspended, okay?
That's the first
one. The first one is the fact that right now there's fire and ice coming down. That's first one miracle, okay? That's a change in natural law, meaning laws need to work a certain way, now you're changing it. An aberration would be, okay, well, frogs do sometimes come by the Nile River. On this day, there's going to be a lot of frogs that show up, okay?
What's the definition of that word?
Abnormal. It's like things work a certain way normally. This is like a little not what you expected, which leads to the last one, which is something very unexpected. But is that technically an aberration in nature? It just means that, I'll tell you what it is, like this. In other words, unexpected is like the odds that are happening are so, well, it's similar. The odds that are happening are so slim, like, only because of your experiences.
Right.
Right? Meaning like I never would expect like on this day, like frogs, this many frogs to show up. You know what I mean? But it's not a huge difference between the two. The key difference is there an actual breach or change in the laws of nature, or is it simply the unexpected?
You're saying like it would be 90 degrees one day and then the next.
Let's use a 6-day war as a good nafkamina. In other words, which people like to use a 6-day war as a nafkamina, because by the six day war, so what people say is they call that a miracle, right? Why? Because of the odds, meaning that a smaller army beating a bigger army in that circumstance, the odds of happening are very small. Now that's tempting to say it's a miracle. Again, but why would that be a miracle? We see things all the time happen that go against. For instance, when a football team wins a Super Bowl that wasn't expected to, right? With the odds are against it, would they call it a miracle? Well, some people do.
Sometimes they do.
Yeah, some people say it's a miracle. To me, that seems very. On the one hand, it seems demeaning to what the idea of miracle is, because we want the miracle. Well, idea of miracle that's some theological.
Like miracle on ice. They don't mean. Right. They just mean.
But as Zeb brought up, we also know that there have been much greater miraculous military victories in the Six-Day War. Much greater. Hitler's victory over Germany and France in World War II initially was certainly, statistically, was an extremely unlikely event. So we have to be very careful. Remember I told you guys when it comes to free will, it's your expectation? Miracles are the same way. It's a question of what you want your miracle to be. If your miracle is, wow, I can't believe that happened, the odds of it happening are very slim, but then you have to tolerate the idea that in football, like, you know, Super Bowl victories or...
Then it just doesn't become a miracle.
Well, also other religions...
The more you lower it,
when I gave this over to, I think it was the... I gave it over to one of the I think it was Matan. I showed them that historically, every religion has in their back pocket that great military victory. The Muslims have theirs. The Christians have many where, like the as they put it, the infidels came and attacked them, like the Muslims, and there was like a siege, and there were like 500 people in the fort, and they were able to hold them off. So we always have that, right? We always have that. So on the other hand, though, what's the consequence of a change? Why is a change in the laws of nature so problematic? And you'll see the Rambam and others don't like it. Why? What's wrong with a change in the law?
I made a mistake in the laws of nature.
But what does it imply?
It's changing.
The idea of changing. That's something we don't like. We don't like that notion of changing things. We want God to be, want things to be.
God doesn't change.
Right. Okay. So this is what. Why don't we want God to change? Because that's physical.
That means he's in time.
That means he isn't what he wasn't before.
We don't want that. Hashem Echad. As you'll soon see, there's a famous, I'll call it a stira, but inconsistency in the Rambam that we're going to deal with in a second. But the Rambam, yeah, it could be when he got older. But the Rambam, the Perish Mishnayos, okay, and this is the Perish Mishnayos on Masechus Avos. He says very clearly, he says, Kvar Zacharti L'cha B'Perek HaShmini. By the way, what is he referring to, Perek HaShmini? So if you look, I even copy it for you. Look over here. You guys are doing Shmona Prakim, right?
Yeah.
I think. So Shmona Prakim, which I get you in English, I got you in English over here. If you look where I bracket it off, the Rambam says, we do not believe that. Rather, volition occurred during the 6 days of creation, and since then, all things act continuously in accordance with their natures. So the Rambam lays out here that clearly there's no such thing in any sense that we consider to be a miracle, meaning God programmed into the moment of the Big Bang. What would be included in that? That on July 5th, whatever that year was, the sea would split. You understand?
Yeah.
There's never an idea of like laws of nature operating a certain way and then God intervening. Rather, it was fixed into the laws of nature that on this day, this is what would happen. Therefore, it becomes a part of the laws of nature. Therefore, there's no change that takes place. So the Rambam says, and also in the Perek Mishnayos, he also says clearly that when God created the universe, he created it like option two. But the Meiri, what?
No, it says like 10 things.
Rambam, Mishnah, Masechta Avos, Perek.
Forget. Yeah, 10 things were like. Okay.
Yeah, but you're talking about Banish Mashos. That's what he comments on. Things are created in Banish Mashos. Yeah, like versus Korach, the pit opening up for Korach. Okay, but the Meiri, for example, and the Rashbats both argue. Stop it. They both argue the Rambam and say no. I mean, basically, the Rashbat says you see that the tefillah of a Navi creates like a, what it can create, like, well, for instance, when Eliyahu Navi is Mispalel, it's hard to read the Rambam to think that this is what's going on. It sounds a lot.
No, he was programmed to do that.
I understand.
But
I'm just saying,
free will.
But right, I'm just saying, pashtus, when you read the Torah, pashtus, it sounds more like this. And the Meiri also rejected it.
So you have a
big machlokas rishonim about whether or not which version it is. But I want to show you one other thing. The Rambam himself in the Mora, okay, look what he says here. He says, when I, however, said that no prophet ever announced a permanent change of any of its properties, I intended to accept miracles. For though the rod was turned into a serpent, the water into blood, the pure noble hand into a leprous one, without the existence of any natural cause that could affect each of similar phenomena, these changes were not permanent. They have not become a physical property. On the contrary, the universe since continues its regular course. So let me just finish. So a lot of people jump on that and want to claim that the Rambam later on in life veered a little back towards this path because he starts saying things like changes and not a permanent change, which sounds a lot like that. And by the way, there's other instances that the Rambam's writings and his Igaris and Chiyas Mesim and other ones where he does sound a lot like this and not as much like that. So some want to argue
kind of
that...
It does sound like the second one. It's a change in the laws of nature when it grows back.
No, that's this.
No.
That's
not
this.
A change. The second one's our perception of the laws of nature.
Right. It doesn't matter whether you hold it as an actual breach or you hold it the second way. There definitely are different kinds of nisim. So what are the different kinds? You guys have all learned this in school. Like, what kind of nisim are there?
Surviving birth.
Well, what are the classic ones we talk about?
Yamsuf.
Okay, so what's Yamsuf? Yamsuf is like
publicizing.
Okay, that's a public miracle. Okay, well, okay, one second. Chaim's, you don't get caught up in the wrong language. When you say big one, what do you mean?
I mean like not hidden.
You're not hidden. People make a mistake, and this is an error I find quite often, where they try to grade miracles based on Kriyas Yamsuf was a bigger miracle because of, let's say, the body of water. But that's not true because once you tolerate, especially in this version, of course, this one's obvious, but even in this version, once you tolerate a breach, it's irrelevant how extensive the breach is. It wouldn't matter if, as long as you say one atom is not functioning the way it should be functioning based on the laws of nature, it doesn't matter how big it is afterwards. It's irrelevant. It's irrelevant. There's no difference between the two. So, yeah, 1 second. So you have one kind of miracles, Yamsuf, which is a public display, which, by the way, usually those kind of miracles are attached to what? Like, why they come into existence? Come on, before you say Az Yashir, before you say Az Yashir, what's the pesukim you say right before you say Az Yashir?
Yosha
Hashem, Yeshua. Quite often, those public miracles. Oh, okay, so that's the second kind of miracle. One kind of miracle is that overt public display where B'nai Yisrael were headed towards their doom, right? And there's a Yeshua, a moment of Yeshua through the next. That's one kind, that's a public one. Then you have these other kinds which are called
hidden.
these hidden miracles. Okay. Sesser. Right, and Miguel Sesser is a common example. Now, what does a hidden miracle mean?
I don't know.
What?
It seems like things are going according to like a more natural way. There's no unnatural looking thing that's happening.
But it's harder for the human to see the hand of God.
Yeah, so then what does that mean according to like the
law?
What the heck does that mean according to the law? The only thing that is a miracle is the fact that it's not hidden.
Right, so that's a great question. St. Thomas Aquinas actually does a great job categorizing the three kinds of miracles and basically says the grand kind of miracle is a miracle that in your mind clearly violates the laws of nature, right? Like a clear violation. The second kind of miracle is another one where it could be public, but it's not a violation. Rather, it's just something that goes against your experience, right? And then the third one is where, where he mentions like God cures someone. Okay, which here, types of miracles, where what happened is that, let's say you didn't expect a person to get better, and he does. But of course, this is where a serious problem emerges, where Spinoza and others raise a question, which is like this, okay? Let's say, chas v'shalom, let's say Charlie gets diagnosed with stage 75,000, deathitis, okay? Okay, and all the doctors come in and say, there is no chance of you surviving. Okay? And you survive. Okay, so the natural impulse would be to say, it was a miracle, right? Okay. But Spinoza will come along and say, well, it's not a miracle. As human beings, our knowledge is limited, right? And the fact is, our knowledge of medicine right now is limited insofar as what it takes to cure someone who has stage 75,000 deathitis. We just don't know, right? That's what I'm saying. In other words, maybe it's possible that since we lack the information, that's why he got better. Or another, again, use other examples. Like when let's say you got hit by a car, right, and you survived. But you could just argue that had I known all the physics beforehand, right, I would have known, I'm just lacking in information. So the question is, so this is a big question when it comes to miracles. That's the question. It's a big question that comes up when it comes to understanding miracles. Can we make the argument to say that my lack of knowledge is the reason why? We can actually have a convergence of this philosophical and scientific issue where it says alleged conflict. Where you can both kind of make Spinoza happy and the theologian happy. There is a way to do it. There is a possible theory. Again, the question you struggle with by Nisim is that on the one hand, when a guy sees an aberration or a violation of laws of nature, he'd say, like the rock floats up, he'll say, that seems to be a violation of laws of nature, which you would be right to say. On the other end, you can just make the argument that, well, I just lack the scientific information of this localized event to understand why it's floating up. Maybe there's a very reasonable scientific explanation why this thing is floating up.
Well, like, you know, this is the damn...
Okay. When we briefly discussed quantum mechanics, okay, briefly. So remember, what makes quantum very interesting and very, very difficult to understand is as follows, okay? If you have an event, we're talking about on the subatomic level, okay? So let's say you have uranium, okay? This is uranium. And particles, right? Little alpha particles come off, okay? So there's no way that we know of that human beings are capable of ascertaining the cause, okay? We don't know. It's. I'm putting in big quotes, so calm down. It's random in the sense that there's no method we have to predict when a specific particle will fly off that piece of uranium.
Well, it doesn't mean there's no cause.
Again, as far as we know right now, we call it random. Now, that doesn't mean God doesn't know. Let's ignore that for now. Okay. Now, on top of that, what that also means...
that God doesn't know. It's, it's Greek.
Hold on. Let's talk about an atom for a second. In fact, let's talk about an electron. Does everyone know what an electron is?
Yeah.
You do know what an electron is. Come on, man.
I'm not philosophically well educated.
What?
It's not philosophy. It's science.
What we know about electrons, though, we know something very funny about electrons. Sure. We know that when it comes to an electron, right... Once I look for it, what happens to it?
It
becomes the normative, I'm using very overly simplistic terms, it becomes the normative physical electron. Meaning, without looking at it, it exists in what's called a waveform. It exists like this.
We know it's around the cell.
No, there's no cell.
I mean, atom, my bad.
No, it's not even around there. There's no around. Okay? It exists in this form. This is called the wave. And then looking at an electron, again, it's not in any physical form, causes it to become this. So it goes what's called wave state, to physical state or particle state.
Like
yes,
that
is quantum.
How does that
what?
Can you explain that again?
Do we know
okay,
how that happens?
So no, that's the problem.
Oh, he's a different pack, so I can't see this one all the time.
Sure,
sorry,
that's okay.
That's the point.
In other words, this is what we've discovered as far as we know about the subatomic world. We have something called electrons. Okay.
Oh crap!
How did we discover this?
That's a great question.
Double
not for now. We're gonna do that. We're gonna do that later. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So without looking at it, okay, it exists in what's called a wave state. Okay. Imagine a wave. Imagine a wave. A wave is something that's dispersed everywhere. Okay.
What does this mean without looking at it? What do you mean? Like who looks at it?
Nobody. Normally speaking, that's what exists.
Okay.
And then once I look at it,
what does that mean? With a microscope.
Microscope.
Yes.
Okay. Because what's required when I use a microscope? What happens? What do I need to be able to see this?
Light.
And what's the photons that that transport light, so to speak? I mean, they really are light, but I'm saying they're transferring information. What do they have to do for me to see the electron?
Bounce
off of it. The moment the photon, right,
it's
hits,
light.
So to speak, this form, it forces it to collapse, okay? It causes a collapse of the wave state.
So how do we know that it's in a wave state before it's that? If we never looked
you don't observe it.
I'll show you through the double slit experiment, okay? The behavior of electrons without observing them, or photons for sure, doesn't make any sense. It doesn't fit in, because
like,
doesn't fit into this.
It means like,
this came about through what's called, there were two basic theories in physics for quite some time between Einstein and some others, whether it was called, whether light was a wave or a particle, and quantum in a sense brought that together, because it turns out they are really both. It's wave and particle. Okay, it's electron the same way. Right, yes. Right, okay, wait. Here, the reason why this is important here is like this, okay? Because that's the case. So now, what's important to understand is that in this realm, in this wave realm here, okay, the ideas are probably, there is an infinite number of possible outcomes of this electron.
But not actually.
Okay? We know that, yes. Meaning, there's no way I could predict, okay, so to speak, right, what's going to cause.
There's no way?
That we know of. That's going to predict this wave state turning into this electron, okay? In other words, all we know is when I look at it, right, the photon hits off of it and causes it to collapse, okay? Which, what's, it's just part of what.
You know it's gonna
how
happen.
Does the electron.
No, you don't. Yet. You don't know for sure.
They said that it's because the light photon.
Right, so what's so that's the next step. The next step in this, next step is that when it comes to, when it comes to this subatomic world,
wait.
Okay?
How does the photon bounce off the thing?
Across here is that, but this subatomic world, guys, this subatomic world where electrons are and stuff like that, all these particles, they don't operate based, as far as we know, on normal physics, which means, to make it simple, okay, there's an area of what's called randomness.
They can exist
okay?
twice at the same time.
That's one example. There's all sorts of quirky things that take place
binary code?
In this subatomic world. Right, which really is defined by this thing called randomness. Okay,
stop.
That's what you need to know. That it's very random over there. It's been proposed by some. It's been proposed by some. Avi,
basic chemistry.
There are those who propose that if there's going to be an area where there is divine intervention, this is the realm. Okay. So watch how it's spelled out, okay? In 1958, William Pollard suggested that God acts at the quantum level, okay? Several members of the DAP have taken up, examined, and developed the suggestion. Okay, all these authors focus on the conventional Copenhagen interpretation. God can cause quantum events, and because the laws are merely statistical, do so without suspending those laws. So again, if I create a realm of the world, of physics, where it's not that the laws are definitive, it's never like this. Rather, it's basically lots, like,
random,
again, infinite,
sporadic.
Not really infinite, okay, of possibilities, right? And that's the way the world works. So then there's a probability that always exists that the seed would split. Built into the laws of nature, so again, this is the convergence.
This is genius.
Built
who
it.
Says this?
Wait, so
a lot, well, this guy,
how's
but others.
How's that different than
everyone?
Yeah.
The line with
them? If you create a universe of 99.9%, then you allow the means of saying that God's intervening in nature, but not changing any laws, because the laws themselves are never actually immutable laws. They're not actually built in as it's my way or the highway. Rather,
yeah, they're not
built,
laws.
He says, on these collapse approaches, collapses are not restricted to measurements. They occur spontaneously at a regular rate. Okay? Meaning that He wants one. What this scientist wants to propose is that in the subatomic world, there's these constant spontaneous collapses. They happen to always spontaneously collapse in a way that makes the universe run the way we perceive it to run normally, but that allows for the possibility of a spontaneous collapse to take place that goes against our, and that will lead to a cascade from the subatomic world into the macroscopic world of a miracle. Okay, again, this allows for a convergence of, in my opinion, a Spinoza question with a theological question.
Yeah.
How can miracles take place? Because what you could say is that you're never really suspecting the laws of nature, because the laws of nature themselves are really based on statistical probability. And therefore, what's happening? There's this little tiny, like, the word tiny is not even a good word to use, but there's an adjustment in the subatomic world. There's a wave collapse that wasn't, that you didn't predict to happen, but happens, right? And that cascades into a nace. So what do we take, what's the take-home message from this then? First of all, it's not that we need a scientific explanation for miracles. We don't. However, it's nice to see that there is some possibility that exists, and it does make it somewhat simple. There's a lot of objections to this approach, by the way, that are in here. I definitely think it's worth reading them, but there are definitely objections to whether this can actually be true or not. But the point is, Spinoza could be answered by this type of approach. But again, going back to what I said in the beginning, when it comes to Nisim, again, we have to start asking ourselves, you know, it's funny, enough at this point, I mentioned Rabbi Baran's approach, the idea or taking the Rambam's concept of minimizing the fantastic element of Nisim.
He claims he's not doing that. He claims he's maximizing it.
Whatever,
because
fine.
It's not a chisar.
Okay, fine. But the point is that for many people, when you tell that to them, and that's why you should be very careful, that's actually deflating. And I'm not sure if it's such a good idea. For some people, right, for some people, it's good. For some people to say that miracles are not breaches, but rather something like this. One second, let me finish, or something like this. Might not be a bad thing, but there are other people I've spoken to who, when I tell them this, they're like, their whole, if what, you take away their whole, like, again, their expectation of miracle is this, right? And once that's your expectation of miracle, if you try to bring it down to something like this, what's going to happen to the way they relate to Nisim? It's going to become much more reduced.
It defeats the whole purpose of the
Nisim. Right, exactly, right. And if the purpose of Nisim, ultimately, great point, is to really bring us to a greater appreciation of Kaddish Baruch Hu, then don't worry so much about breaking them down if they have, like, a breach in law nature idea. There's nothing wrong with that. There's plenty of people who hold that's the case.